Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 202. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Kevin Williams. Welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. Kevin, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Absolutely.
All righty. We want to hear the whole story. Kevin Williams comes from corporate America, holding titles such as division president and senior VP sales and marketing. He now owns a master office license to a company that allows him to work directly with executives finding unique opportunities outside of the standard job market. His domestic and international experience plays a strong role in being a liaison to individuals looking for entrepreneurial scenarios, especially as it relates to working with franchise opportunities. Okay, Kevin, that's a pithy summation of your career today. Tell us what you're working on now that has you engaged and excited.
All right. Well, thank you, Don. I appreciate that. After the full career in corporate America, I own a license to a company that allows me under executive advantage to go out and work with people that have lost their jobs, people who are frustrated in corporate America, people looking to just kind of handle their own future. And it's very exciting because a lot of people out there right now, especially in that 45 age group plus, has just lost hope in finding a job. So it's very exciting in giving some people some hope, and that's what we do.
Take just a minute and tell us how that works exactly so that listeners can know the niche you're in.
Well, sure. We offer a no-fee service. So when we talk to candidates, there's no cost to those individuals. We do get paid on the back end, so nothing is for free, but the candidate themselves are not paying for that service. And what we do is about a 30-minute interview with our candidates and ask them what it is they would like to do with their future. We also ask them, without looking into financials, we just ask them to be honest with us so that we can help them the best, and how much money they might be willing to invest to drive their own future forward. Mm-hmm. What we do through that process is we turn that over internally to someone, so that individual will come back from the research and offer up about 4 to 6 different opportunities for the candidates to kind of take a 30,000-foot view of those opportunities and knock it down to 4 or 6 or whatever. And then we put them in contact, and we're liaisons to franchises, startup companies, businesses that have been sold, and maybe, you know, businesses that need to be sold because of retirement or some other situation related to that. So it's a non-threatening process. It actually opens up some eyes to individuals because it's opportunities outside of McDonald's or Burger King or something like that. These are more a little down to earth and what we call non-sexy opportunities where people can make a lot of money and also lean on the experience of some of the companies we bring forward to make sure they're successful.
It sounds like a wonderful service. How long have you been doing this?
I bought the license a little over 2 years ago.
Good. Excellent. So as you know, everyone's life journey is composed of a series of turning points, some call them passages. At these times, we're each faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the course of the next 6 or 7 years of our lives. Take us back in the backstory of Kevin Williams to early turning points and share some of the more impactful ones, if you will.
Well, thank you again, Don. I appreciate that. I want to start back with my career, where it all began, and that was at 15 years old when I was playing sports in high school and decided I was never going to be a pro. Just didn't have the talents there, but really enjoyed what I was doing. So I wound up working in a wholesale photo finishing lab, and it's all my brother's fault for doing that because he was the one who really loved photography and those kind of things. So I started in that. I started right where a lot of people do. I was mopping floors and cleaning toilets and doing all those lovely things. But enjoyed what I was doing and stayed with it. And at 18, I was a supervisor in that wholesale lab. So I graduated high school and also married my high school sweetheart at 18.
Oh, my word.
Didn't know any better. So we had dated for 2 years. We got married. I was managing that wholesale lab at night. And so off and running in the career world. And then 5 years later, we were going to school at night and working full time. 5 years later, my daughter was brought into this world, and I said, this is not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. My financial opportunities are not here. And through that process, I had worked with a company called Eastman Kodak.
Sure.
I watched a guy come in and that I had service agreements with, and he'd come in a three-piece suit and sit there and tell me, he said, Kevin, when I leave here, you need to know how to work on this equipment because I'm not always going to be around. So why don't you do all the work? And I'll sit here and tell you what to do. And I thought, you know what? One day I want that guy's job. And lo and behold, I did wind up getting that job.
Wow.
And I tried to get into Eastman Kodak in the sales division. And at that time, there was nothing open. So I went in through the service organization.
Okay.
And wound up doing that for several years and then was taken to the headquarters to launch a mini lab program. That's where they do photo finishing on site. So I took my Southern bride from Georgia into snow that was neck deep, You know, experience number one, and realized I wanted to probably live somewhere other than Rochester and wanted to be in sales. So it was at that point that I leaped over into the sales organization and went out selling capital equipment. And inside of Kodak at the time, you really needed to be able to sell film because that was where their lifeblood was. So I transitioned from equipment into the film side of things, wound up going back to Rochester, New York, once again, to work with some of the national accounts, Walgreens, just to give you an example, Target, those kind of companies, and support the sales staff there. And then lo and behold, one day they walked into Rochester and said, we're going to move consumer imaging down to Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm from Columbus, Georgia, so I was the happiest guy in the entire office when I heard that news.
What year was this?
This was during the Olympics in 1995.
Okay, wow.
So
that must have been a glorious day.
Well, it was there in Washington, D.C., and okay. When I heard the news, I was very, very excited. So it was a great, great opportunity for me to get back to Georgia and was very happy for it. I kind of saw some things as it relates to Kodak's future and decided it was probably going to be time that I left Kodak. And so I did in 1999.
What did you intuit about that?
I'm sorry?
What did you see? What was your intuition or what was your observation about that?
The observation was that the world was changing in which we live, and Kodak, when I went to work for them in 1980, we were the number one brand in the world. So we had a brand presence better than Coca-Cola, Mercedes, and companies of that type. And what I watched was an industry that made all their money in film, and the world was going digital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at corporate America today, the shareholders want return, and they want it now. And it's a classic example of where, you know, your CEOs are not long tenured CEOs any longer. So it's, what do you want from me, board?
Mm-hmm.
And they give it. And it's short term results, not thinking about the company or the employee.
Right.
You know, Kodak's bread and butter was making film, and they were not willing to make the transition. But others in the marketplace were willing to go digital because that's what they did. Someone will write a really nice book on that company one day relative to watching the demise of it and what happened there.
And you have to know that there were some forward thinkers in there that saw it as clearly as you're describing it, that just couldn't get any support for that obvious strategic move. I mean, it wasn't obvious at the time, but some people saw it, and to them it was obvious, right?
Right. So, you know, I love Kodak. It was very good to me. A lot of outstanding training. But what happened was they finally went out and brought someone in from the outside. Most of the CEOs have been internal people who'd grown up through the company, great family atmosphere, great product. And they brought someone into the company who thought that if you were a long tenured Kodak individual, there was probably something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And what the company really needed was some 30-year-old MBAs to come in and really kind of change things and make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost the expertise in that process of people, you know, it's not toilet paper. It's not toothpaste. It was a different division, and it was not something that was well-received once those individuals made it into the company.
Mm-hmm.
The aspect of working for Kodak was that you just love the place. You love the people you're working with, and you love the products. If you don't have 20 years or 30 years of the company, and you come in and you're looking to make big dollars a year or two and so forth and so on, well, that's not the way it would work. Mm-hmm. So it was just a sad story. Mm-hmm. Again, great company, great products. I think just misguided along the way. Mm-hmm. In that process, I left Kodak and I was very blessed in my mid years to go to get some experience with a German company and with a Japanese company in my next process in my life, to do some things both domestically and internationally with some of the world's largest retailers, such as Walmart and Costco's and those types of companies, and really got a great experience in doing that. And then to be named as a division president for Mexico.
Wow.
So it was very diverse. It came fast and furious. I was introduced to a lot of different things. And in that process, I had to go out and buy the book Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know what I was supposed to do in each country. So yeah. I felt like I needed that experience to really kind of ground me a little bit in what to expect and how to work with others across the borders, if you will.
Did you have to travel to those countries?
I did indeed. I did indeed. And I still had responsibility back in the U.S. So I'd be in China getting phone calls at the wee hours of the morning because people just didn't know where I was or what time zone I was in. So it was challenging. When I would go to the Asia region, I would tell my wife, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, because I just do not want to be running back and forth in that process. So a lot of fun, a lot of challenges. It was in my earlier days, so wasn't quite as painful as probably what it would be today in running back and forth, but really, really enjoyed the getting the expertise of dealing with different cultures. Mm-hmm. And, even with the same companies in different regions, they too had a great learning. It was great to be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah. What did you find the major cultural differences were between the German and Japanese companies versus the United States?
Okay, this is going to get me in a lot of trouble, but we'll go ahead and address that.
All right, go for it.
In working with the German companies, it was very good because if there was something that needed to be discussed, you could discuss it and you just really kind of roll up the sleeves and go for it. But when it was over, whenever a decision was made, you still knew where you stood. Your personality had to blend to that, but it was a good experience because you just fought it out and you got it taken care of. When you work with all other cultures, it's more working in committee. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different. And a yes is not always, yes, we will do that. It's yes, I understand, or yes, I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much in tune to, here's the problem. Let's address it. Let's move forward. Mm-hmm. And so when you have committee meetings versus having decision makers and just kind of getting through the issues and moving on, it can be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What happened next?
Well, the photo industry, which was my bread and butter for 40 plus years, saw the demise of Kodak, went bankrupt. The Konicas pulled out of the photo industry. Your Agfa went bankrupt. HP, which was in the industry, says there's no money in this business any longer. Everybody's gone digital. They're capturing things on their phone and keeping the images there. And I saw this coming, and that's when I bought the license to the company to allow me to work with people who want to be entrepreneurs.
It sounds like a really gratifying and fascinating and good career from every perspective, though, all that time.
I had a blast. I truly did. We were blessed as a family through that process. My family got to see the U.S., almost every state, with very few exceptions. We got to hang out with some of the most exciting things from sports. Living in Indianapolis, we just had a wonderful time. And again, just exposed to so many different things that we would not have seen. And, it was through that career, my daughter was in 6 schools in 12 years.
Wow.
And, there's challenges to all that. But as an individual, you have to say, you have to bond, number one, as a family through those kind of process. Because every time you move, you have nobody but you and your family. But I think if you ask any of them, they would say they were very blessed through this whole entire process of being able to be exposed to a lot of different things.
Well, the statistics that we shared about the studies that have been going on for decades about employee satisfaction, worker satisfaction, executive satisfaction around the world, and they're pretty stark that people are doing the best they can and they may be making a lot of money and they may be using some of their talents, but on balance, there's still big parts of them that are not being utilized in their careers, in their jobs. Some of that's understandable, of course. You know, the life goes on, but what do you think some of the biggest reasons for that people get stopped and thwarted in their careers?
Well, that's a really, really good question. We live in a day and age where all these various companies are now dealing with global competition, which they've never had to deal with, you know, back during the day, if you will, to use that term.
Mm-hmm.
They've had to cut staff, so all employees are being asked to do more, and there'd be less to do that. And from year to year, when you look at that and you look at the cost of health care, no raises, working additional hours that you weren't accustomed to working, does drive to highly dissatisfied employees. You know, when you talk to a lot of these, they really just want to work 8 to 5 and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no commitment to the employee for the most part nowadays. And when you look from an executive standpoint, those executives are only lasting 3 years
mm-hmm.
on average nowadays. So it is kind of challenging to stay motivated, wanting to put in a lot of hours for a company that has no commitment to you other than what does your Rolodex look like and what can you do for us? And as soon as they've gone through that Rolodex and you've delivered what they were looking for, it's the next individual coming in. So,
right.
And then going back to, you know, what we talked about earlier, the dynamics of what's going on in the marketplace and the shareholders wanting, you know, return on investment ASAP and looking down the road, your 1, 3, 5 year plans that we used to all enjoy and know where we were headed. It's now, what are you doing for me next month? And then 6 months and then who's news coming in here to change things?
Yeah, exactly. What would you advise as far as some tactics and strategies to help people deal with this? You know, and again, at whatever age, whether they're just getting out of college or whether they're pre-retirement, what are some savvy strategies you might offer?
Well, one of the things it's going to be very high on this list is to be a networker.
Okay.
You need to really get out, not networking, looking for things in return. You
right.
need to do this early on before you really need it.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to network and then be a giver in that network, not a taker, but you need to be a giver. And over a period of time, those people that you've given to, they may be unemployed today. Tomorrow, they might be a CEO, a CFO, or some other key individual in some company. You never know. They might start their own company and pull you over. But be a giver, be a networker, do it with every occasion. When I used to hear about people going to networking, I'd be like, where did they go? And the more you get into that particular realm of trying to hone your skills, there are more networking opportunities than you know what to do with, and you have to eventually find the ones that are most beneficial for you. But to go out and really be a good networker, start early and give. The second thing I would say is be nice to everybody and never burn a bridge.
I love that.
Never, ever burn the bridge. No matter how bad you want to do that,
mm-hmm.
don't ever do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else would you say? These are great pieces of advice.
Well, to be nice to everybody, I'll give you a little quick story on this.
Sure.
Kind of laid out myself as to who I am. I'm very project-oriented, want to move through things. And sometimes I would get to, I'll just put it to myself,
okay.
Want to push things through. And sometimes you can rub people the wrong way in trying to do that. And in that, you might not have made some friends with some people that you really needed to be your friend. And there's always a good way and a bad way to get something done. And I can tell you a very good story about myself where I tried to push a project through, probably pushing some people maybe beyond their capability, if you will,
mm-hmm.
And had to reflect back on that and say, you know, maybe that's not the right approach.
Okay.
And I went back and really tried to befriend this person, not out of need or want or anything else, but just in the fact that there's always a better approach to it. And through that, it was a very key individual that probably helped me get the title of division president.
Ah.
So well,
what did they say when you went back to them? Did you say, hey, I'm sorry, maybe I was a little heavy-handed or maybe I was pushing too hard? Or how did you present the case?
Yeah, the process was it was a CFO.
Okay.
That, you know, CFOs don't always have the same mindset of a salesperson, right?
Right.
We just had to come to some terms. Maybe it's the way you explain it mm-hmm. versus just trying to push it through.
Okay.
A lot of times in companies, there are different goals. And sometimes you're not well aware of what those goals are. A lot of times those goals are established in bonus programs. You might have one bonus program and someone in finance might have a totally different one than you do.
Right.
And you're trying from a sales perspective to drive that to the highest levels from a sales perspective, but maybe it impacts GP a little bit and that impacts your financial manager. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of understanding where people are and also understanding maybe what's going on in their life. And sometimes, you know, in the business world, you can take things personally.
Right.
And it's not personal. Sometimes it could be, right. But most of the time it's tied to business. And if you really kind of reflect back on people in general, you know, everybody's dealing with something different in their life each and every day.
Yes.
And for this particular person, that individual was dealing with a sister that was dying of cancer.
Did you know that?
I did not know that until after it was all over.
Okay.
So it really kind of impacted me. And, you know, Kevin, you need to just back off. And we really became friends. She started sharing some of the things that she'd been going through and those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you be nice to everybody, and that's from the admin, because the admin plays a bigger role than a lot of people think.
Right.
I sat in meetings where I had questions asking me about people in other departments. And when I first experienced that, I was like, wow, that's kind of a shocker that somebody in another department could have had control over my career, you know, 10 years ago, and I never realized it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great learning tool to know that if you just be nice to everybody, you have nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Because everybody will come to your rescue when time is needed. But don't do it for some type of motive.
Right.
Just do it because it's the right thing to do.
Yes, exactly. So what aspects of your life have been most positively affected by you choosing to live life on your terms and to have a personal vision for your career and make the hard choices and move ahead? What have been the benefits to you in your life?
Well, I can tell you, over the course of my career, I really looked at myself as the utility infielder. And I always wanted to know just about everything I could get my hands on. Now, you know, through career, there are some people that just want to be the pitcher, if you will.
Right.
And they want to be the star. Well, and then when the shoulder goes out, they have nothing, right? Because mm-hmm. that's the one thing that they used.
Mm-hmm.
And through my life, I've always tried to learn and be the utility infielder, which doesn't always get the stardom, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what I was looking for. But it allowed me to be very diverse, and it also helped me to be one of the last standing in the photo industry.
Right.
Through that process. Learn as much as you can. Be nice to everybody you can. And let the world play in front of you and try not to get frustrated when it's not happening at your speed.
Yes.
Because the doors will open, some will close. Some you step back a little bit only to step forward 10 steps farther than where you were before.
Exactly. Have there been books or resources that have been important to you as you've gone through your career?
Oh, absolutely. And some of the ones that are, you know, on foremost to a lot of people, Good to Great by Jim Collins. I'm a big reader of John C. Maxwell, Harvey McKay. I ran across one recently by a gentleman in the Atlanta area, Ricky Steele. And he calls it the Heart of Networking, and it's his second edition. And it brings a different approach to networking, and it kind of blends into what I was talking about earlier. When you get out there, just meet people, not looking for, you know, I'm meeting this person because I want to close a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you early on network without expectations, his book is great for that.
That's Ricky Steele, right?
Ricky Steele, yes, sir.
Okay.
And then, of course, the best book of all time ever written is the Bible, because it kind of puts it all into one place and easy read and gives you good direction.
Okay. So this internet thing plays an increasing role in people's lives, and I think mostly far and away mostly for the good. How do you use the internet? What tools on the internet?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. That is a great, great question. And I tell you, I go to classes as often as I can because that is always moving.
Yes.
And the, you know, depending on what your business is and what you're doing, you need to really determine what is your best tool for you because there's so many of them out there. You know, Facebook now, I went to a seminar on that a while back and it said that you can have a website now, but if you're not within inside of Facebook, that most people will not even go out to your website.
Right.
So you got to have your website must be within inside of Facebook and that's just a click over. You know, Twitter, there's a lot of discussion around that, but there too is another tool that individuals need to learn how to use. And then of course, you know, within our group, what is most important to us would be LinkedIn. And from an executive perspective, everybody needs to be really, really good at LinkedIn. I sat through a class just a couple of weeks ago that talked about 16 different venues. And I will tell you that there were many of them that were mentioned that I had never heard of. So it's time consuming and it's a moving target, but everybody, no matter what you're doing in life, in the business world, whether you're an entrepreneur, you work for someone, stay up on those types of things. I have a great story as it relates to, you know, staying up on these things. And that's when I worked at one of my companies and that's when we had admins and I watched an individual say, you know, we're getting computers, but I'm not going to learn them because I have an admin.
Gosh.
I remember going to the first class when he was forced to learn about a computer and the individual in front said, everybody grab your mouse. And this man's hand literally went up and said, what's a mouse? And I said to myself then, I think it was in the early 40s, maybe in the late 30s. I never want to be that guy.
No.
And I remember several years back listening to some guys standing outside my office talking about apps. And I had no idea what they were talking about. And they were showing me their Apple phones and those kind of things. And I said, you know, as long as I can reply to emails and answer a phone, I do not need all of those different things. And it was at that point, no sooner than I got it out of my mouth, that I say to myself, you're now the guy who doesn't know what a mouse is. And I immediately got up from my desk, real life story, and ordered an iPhone so that I could educate myself on apps and all the other things that are taking place in the market. So stay up on technology and as it relates to these different platforms, go test them, get out there, get good advice, and then find the one that's really good for you and work it to the best of your ability.
Well, exactly. I mean, you can't be on Periscope and Instagram and on and on and on, but if you pick, like you just said, if you pick two or three, probably three that really work for you and then work on those and master those, then you can add others as you need to.
Absolutely.
At least you've got the foundation. So what do you see happening in the life of Kevin Williams and team over the coming 3 to 5 years? What's your vision going forward?
That's a great question as I hit 59 this year. And I'm looking forward to the coming years more than you know. I think there's so many opportunities out there. And, you know, in our business, what we talk to most individuals, they're in my age group, if you will. Some are older, some maybe just a little bit younger. But when you talk to all of them, they're all talking about giving back. And I'm excited. There's a lot of things happening with the business and talking to other people. And one of the things I want to do is, you know, through the experience we've discussed here today, I want to give back to others. And I do that by teaching some classes to young married people and engage people and try to help them and also get engaged with others from a business perspective. You know, try to, and my goal is to, I just point to my gray hair and say, you know, if I can save you a stripe or two, let me do that.
Yes.
Whether it be personal or professional, trying to help in that arena.
Yes. What are you proudest of, Kevin?
You know, I have three grandchildren. I have two wonderful children. And I have a wife that I've been married to for 40 years.
Wow.
And, you know, we can talk about career and those kind of things. But I tell you, my proudest moment is when my kids want to vacation with me and my grandkids want to hang out at my house. And we get to enjoy the benefits of the professional side.
Yes.
But that's what I'm most proud of is my family and where they are in life and how much they want to spend with Papa.
Congratulations most sincerely on that.
Thank you.
Kevin Williams, a great pleasure being with you today. We appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey. And I know that our listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
They can reach me at kevin@executiveadvantage.org, or they can go to my website, www.executiveadvantage.org.
Good. Listeners know you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com and go to the podcast section where the highlights of this fine interview are housed, and you can read the highlights, and also you can get the links that Kevin just described. So please take advantage of that. Thank you, listeners across the world, our growing tribe. We appreciate you very much. Thank you for joining us today. You can also subscribe for free to this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd love for you to be a part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We do not learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.